Solara, we're back again after a couple of months away.
Yes.
And we have a new setup and things like that. Now, remember, we kind of started off with video setup just beginning of this year, right?
Yes.
So we kind of like finished 1 year already and with a new kind of seasons and setup. So, I mean, it's been 2 months since our last episodes and so many things have happened. Very interesting things. And in fact, we were like, I remember the last few episodes before we stopped, kind of like talking about the disappointments with government and things like that. And, you know, I was just telling you the other day that I had some time to reflect and I kind of begin to see, look, government, the change is important, but at the same time, I do understand why it is not easy to change and kind of make me think, you know, why we even do this podcast in the first place. It's really we have some ideas, we have some aspiration for the nations and we kind of want to share with people and, you know, not really to tell you what is the right thing or wrong thing, but just kind of have a discussion about it. And we kind of talk about the three major themes that we have been talking the past couple of years, right? I mean, one, of course, is really the very basic of what we want everyone to have is really pursuit of happiness. It's like if you want your nation to do well, it is because you are making a good living and we don't have to migrate. You don't have to go to Singapore because it's 3.5, 3.6 now. Then we talk about, what else did we talk about? We talk about self-determination. And I think that's really in the context of federal versus state government and especially Sarawak, right?
Yep.
I mean, what do you make of this self-determination concept?
No, I mean, interestingly, you mentioned about the pursuit of happiness. I mean, I would see both to be very, very on par. Mm-hmm. As in, you can't have the freedom to pursue happiness if you don't have self-determination. So yep. I really see both as in, it's literally like your left hand and your right hand. Both have to work hand in hand and really just... Because without self-determination, I mean, literally, that's the ability to lead yourself. I mean, but then again, how much... I mean, we have been talking so much about the government intervention.
Mm.
How much government intervention do you need? I mean, we don't agree necessarily that we need to have a total liberty.
Because
we are not working towards like, oh, we don't want any government at all because that would be like a mob rule of different kind. But really, I mean, we want some form of government control, but how many government in the world that can really exercise that sort of refrain when they're in power? I think that's really the test that we are seeing in, especially in big government. I mean, the more, the bigger that they grow, the more power that they want, the more authority that they want.
So that's why this two theme naturally leads to the third theme that we always talk about, which is small government.
Yep.
And basically, when we talk about small government, we're talking about there's a limitations, purposeful, voluntarily limitation placed by the government. And in the Westminster system, in the Western side of the world, we've seen the development, especially first through the English Parliament when they restrict the king, you know, not allowing the king to raise taxation without Parliament.
Yep.
I mean, that led to, you know, King Charles to be beheaded. And then, of course, the next experiment is the American Revolution, and they started a government that really, really self-limiting, purposefully. And I think when you look around, and even in Europe, even in the Oriental part, you don't see any power self-limit. And that's one of the great debate today. You know, we look at China, for example. A lot of their people will be like, oh, democracy is bad. But I think we have a case study. We have Hong Kong. You know, they just have their local elections a few days ago. Lowest ever turnout, I think less than 28%. And it's not because of the whole thing, they have a committee to approve the candidate and most of the pro-democracy candidates were all excluded. So it's like you have a case study. Now, we're not telling people what is good and what is bad, but I think people, when you say, oh, I like the China system or I like the American system, whatever system you like, you have to know what you are getting into. And of course, we have the Malaysian system, kind of like a bit hybrid. We have a bit of choice, but we have such big government from like forever, right? But here's the thing. I mean, just one very initial observation before we get into the detail is when people are kind of doing well, and I think about the, you know, after the 80s economic crash, then Malaysia was doing well under Mahathir, and people don't seem to mind, you know, the way he destroyed the courts, the way he destroyed the structure, the way he kind of centralized all power under Prime Minister office. People don't seem to mind because economy was doing very well. You know, 6 to 7% GDP every year for a long time. And Malaysia was called one of the economic miracles in Asia. So do you think that if people can make a good living, there may be more... I mean, that's why it kind of pursuit of happiness, self-determination, but then if you have a bit of happiness, then maybe big government can come?
I mean, that definitely is what we're seeing in Malaysia. But look at the aftermath of new economic policy. I mean, we really can't move away from that at all. Because, I mean, even when we see all this thing, I mean, I think the very beginning of Malaysia has always been founded on big government sort of concept.
Yep.
So we have never been one that we have seen a nimble, small government that can really be efficient. I think we have not seen efficiency at the level that it should be. So I think that really goes back to what sort of happiness are we trying to pursue here? Because at the end of the day, if it's all just about you and me, we make a good living and we don't care about the state of our nation, I don't think that's the sort of happiness that we are trying to pursue here. Because at the end of the day, what affects the nation literally affects your pocket. So you can't say that, oh, just because I'm doing well here, so I don't care about the state of the government. I mean, that has been the very sort of experiment that Tun Mahathir has got us into, and look where it has landed us today.
Now, interestingly, you mentioned efficiency, because immediately I think about Singapore, and Singapore is famous for their efficiency, right? But do you agree they are a very big government?
Very.
So it goes back to, I mean, very interesting that recently I have so many people, my friends, family who went to Singapore. In fact, I just went myself not too long ago. And both Lanshi and myself, we came back with the same conclusion that you can have a decent, I don't want to call it average because it sounds kind of insulting to the citizen there, but you can have a decent life, but not a great life. And unless you are super, super rich, then you can go anywhere you want. You're not. But let's say you are bound by a lifestyle on the island only. That means you have no upward mobility to other nations. Then it's a very comfortable but average life. Now, I don't know, Singaporean, would you agree with that? But I know, I mean, just the observation from our own family and many people who went there. And I think that's really the impact of big government, when government is able to tell you what to do. And even when the government is right most of the time, Singapore is very well run. I don't think anyone is disputing that.
Yep.
But do you have that self-determination? Do you have the ability to pursue happiness to the level you want?
I think, I mean, the test would really be on how the middle class people can really thrive in a nation. I mean, regardless of, I mean, how the government is trying to, the government policy that is in place. I mean, you have both models here. I mean, you have the Malaysian model, you have the Singaporean model, but both are literally putting a cap, a glass ceiling over the middle class. So I think that's really the challenge here. I think Singaporeans, they have to navigate their way through. Malaysians, they have to navigate their way through. But really, I mean, both nations are, I mean, I don't think any citizens can dispute that they are really looking for a way to really just be happy. I mean, like what our first Prime Minister said, I mean, I just want all Malaysians to be happy. So what's that sort of happiness that we are really looking at, I think?
So before the recording, we kind of talk about some government intervention, right? So some of the policies that is coming to the front, like the removal of subsidy, the Mampu database, and all these are going to happen real soon. And then, of course, you see a lot of taxation. You mentioned about luxury tax. I mean, all these are related to the recently approved budget. And so we talk about, it seems like there is an economic segregation, if I can't, it's like, okay, Olaira, you're doing well, or you're in a certain category, so we have to tax you more because there's a lot of needy people. So that's socialism, right? And
I would argue that's a precursor to communism.
Yeah, I mean, in Malaysia, nobody will really identify themselves as socialism. They will call themselves progressive, but the ideas are very similar, right? That we have government intervention. Government knows best. But then we just talk about the taxation part. Now, we're not disputing that there are needy people and the government will need to help them to get out from the systemic poverty. Now, one of the things we're just discussing is one of the economists, I can't remember his name already, but recently I just attended one of his course and he said, the micro economy, you know, we talk about the nasi lemak, the pisang goreng vendor. He said you can't even call them micro enterprise because they are smaller than micro. And at the end of the day, they contribute almost next to nothing to the GDP. And that's because they whatever they get is really just to survive. And it kind of made me think, right, that, you know, instead of handout, you know, governments, recently governments just give 100 ringgit handout, right?
A lot of my colleagues are checking.
Did they get it and some didn't get it and they
no,
are like
I
not.
Mean, some that are definitely well, I mean, earning quite well.
Definitely they will not qualify,
well.
Right?
After that, some of our other colleagues are like, why are you checking at all?
So that one, it's like, are they using some, you know, are they using your tax database? That's why go back to the Mampu. The government claim they won't, it won't tie to your tax return, but do you believe that?
No. How are they going to segregate? I mean, how would they know this person is within the category eligible?
No, you have to sell. Mampu is that you have to self-declare. So there's a few. Either you're, I mean, they call it disposable income. But actually, disposable income is such a bad definition because to government, disposable income is after-tax income. That's not disposable income. I have mortgage to pay. I have car to pay. If I stay in KL, my living expenses is different from Perlis or Sarawak. So, I mean, we talk about that already, I think a few episodes ago, many episodes ago, I think, that you can't use a line and, you know, talk about, I mean, Klang Valley, people need car. I mean, how many kilometers you need to drive every day to work?
40.
To and back, to and from? That's a lot. I mean, my office is very, very near. I think my new office, maybe I can cycle there. But it's like, that's the thing. There is a unique circumstances for you and for someone like me, I don't need to drive. But is the authority going to factor this in? Obviously not. That's why the disposable income, when I see the definition, I just find it very laughable. After tax, that's not disposable. That's like net income, you know? So, but anyway, we go back to the whole thing about further tax, you know? So you see the T20, not entitled to subsidy. T20 pay more, you use more electricity. Okay, maybe you have more aircon. I mean, not necessarily T20 house will have more aircon, but more likely, right? You're going to be wasteful, whatever. And then more likely you get luxury tax. And you also happen to be the highest level percentage taxpayer. So it's like, if you earn more, you already pay more tax, then you are taxed again. So now, of course, taxation is a very sensitive issue all around the world and government just want more and more and more tax. But do you see that as a necessity or is this further intervention? Further, I won't use the word control, but erosion into our day-to-day life?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you go back to the main reason why do they need to tax more.
Yeah,
exactly because they have more mouths to feed. I mean, the public service servants, there's just a huge lot of people that they need to put the living on their table.
So you need to tax the rich because you don't have meritocracy in certain sector. You have too much waste. You have too much corruption. And all this, we talk about link back to NEP era and kind of link back to the whole big government. Now, talk about civil servant. I think at one stage, right, Is it after the first PH government 2018, did they kind of mention we need to trim down? I think it was in the one of the in the manifesto, right? The buku jingga or whatever, right? And now look at what's happening. I think they are making it fatter and fatter, and they are raising civil servants' salary. See, my dad used to say, my dad was a civil servant, and he was from the era where they received pension. And he said, look, the government is in deep trouble because they had to pay so much pension. People are not dying soon enough. That's what he said exactly.
And the spouse of the public servants, I mean, after disease, I mean, after death, they still entitled to
I think there's some of kind of, until you die, you get a portion. So it's like, I mean, pension is already so much higher spending than EPF contribution. So, but it's like, those are the base of the government support. So you see, socialism is really when you do things that kind of create a class that will support you. And we're seeing the same in US, for example. We lock down, they try to... I mean, look at some of the Democrat-run city, we always say it's very, very badly run because they wanted to create a class that doesn't... is not happy.
Well, they need more visit from the presidency.
Well, I mean, San Francisco, right? I mean, so homelessness, and when presidency visited... it was like, ooh, magic mop
magic
or whatever.
Razor.
So it's like, but coming back to Malaysia, you know, I mean, we always have this, but do you think this is sustainable?
No, eventually you need the money.
Mm.
The money will run out. Like what Margaret
Thatcher
said. Yeah.
It will still run out, right?
Yep.
I mean, if you don't deal with the systemic issue, eventually it will kind of erode into... So some of the things that now we talked about 2 months ago, kind of, I can't even remember the last episode, you know, I think we didn't even publish the last episode, but we kind of feeling a bit...
No, I think at that time we were talking more about the speaker race, House speaker race.
Okay, yeah. that was, but what about in Malaysia? What were we focusing at that time?
Nothing.
I think Prime Minister was like kind of not doing so well, and the reforms are not there. But now 2 months later, I mean, what's your overall view about the direction of our government? I mean, we just have a cabinet reshuffle.
I think that's not a bad thing altogether. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the cabinet reshuffling after a year, I mean, obviously the heat is on the Prime Minister to really, really perform. But going back to, I mean, the performance of Prime Minister, it has been very, very low. Mm. I think the perception has been that there has been lack of reform.
Mm.
I mean, just because there's cabinet reshuffling, I mean, I remain to be optimistic. I think there's going to be... I mean, hopefully the people are going to really just come out and really just give more pressure to the government to have that sort of accountability. But I remain hopeful that our Prime Minister will do well.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've been thinking, you know, because we have general election once every 5 years. In terms of what a normal citizen can do directly impacting the government is very, very, very limited. But nevertheless, I think if people have an understanding on how do we measure good performance, how do we force certain accountability, and so even like what we're doing here, you know, it's just a very, very small thing. But when you kind of raise issue and when people go to social media and things like that. Now, the other day, I think, I can't remember, is it the because now the communications, multimedia ministry have been kind of split into two, right? But I think the previous, the Fahmi, right, was the minister, but he kind of had been on and off, come and say, don't say so much. It's like he just kind of eroding the freedom of speech and kind of like, now, here's the most ironic thing. Yes, Mahathir shut down newspaper. Yes, Mahathir throw people into jail with ISA, but he never censor internet. And why? Because at that time, he said it was a MSC, the pledge. You know, when they say want to make Malaysia multimedia super corridor, I think they have a code of conduct is you cannot censor internet. And later on, he said he kind of regretted it. But I kind of remember during his time, it was during its time, you had Malaysia Kini, Malaysia Insider, all those things. They were never quite shut down. And ironically, you have more shut down now. And so in order for government to avoid accountability, is that one of the reasons?
Yeah, I mean you can't deny that the newspaper have become
predictable or cheerleader for the government.
Rather than true journalism, I would say, or true reporting of the news event, they have become the ones that for lack of better words, keyboard warrior that writes out their own opinion.
Mm.
I mean, we don't need to know your opinion. We need to know the facts, the truth. So, I mean, truth really, really does matter. Irrespective of a lot of people are just saying that, well, truth doesn't really matter. We just need to know what's the sentiment, what's the direction of the government. I mean, but are you truly reporting it? So I think there has been more... I think some news platform, like even like Malaysia Kini, they have been perhaps wanting to please the current government too much.
Mm. Well, for sure they are Pakatan Harapan supporter, and I think grudgingly they kind of support UNITY. I mean there are criticism there here and there, but they are kind of they're kind of very much into the progressive agenda, I guess, from time to time. And But I think I agree with you. But this is also kind of like the worldwide trend that people like, you know, just not reporting news and let people decide. You know, it used to be that the government is afraid of low poll, you know. They're afraid of dissatisfaction. They're afraid of people making noise. But it seems like the government are so, I mean, I'm talking about worldwide, they're just so shameless when the poll are showing very, very poor performance. They are basically like, so what?
Mm.
I dare you not to vote me again. And in fact, you see these problems in United States, especially because so much of election is about money. If you have money, you win. And you see some congressmen 7, 8, 9 times, they are like 80, 90 years old, dinosaur already. And it's like,
but some of them still have very, very sharp mind.
Yeah, some. But some have become demented, you know. And so it's just... It's like this kind of... I don't know. Is it too harsh to call them shameless? They are just... Yeah. I mean, they basically dare the voters. But then again, when we talk about the voter, I think we are what we call a maturing democracy. So people are still learning how to gauge. I guess today, independent, how many independent are there in the parliament? I think we can count in one hand, right? Very rare. So if you don't have a recognizable logo and name, it's unlikely you can get voted in. So kind of like, you know, someone always said Malaysians are very brand conscious.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, talk about fashion, right? I mean, talk about fashion and... If something looks good quality, but there's no label, probably doesn't interest you. So I'm just talking about, because you know, I collect some instruments also. So we have friends who collect instruments, and we just say, look, Malaysian, if they don't hear the mainstream name, they're not going to buy it, no matter how good or how bad it is. So very, very brand conscious, even when it comes to politics. So that's one of the things I'm just thinking, you know, it's like, how do we continue the engagement, and whether these three ideas, you know, we kept talking pursuit of happiness, self-determination, small government, not easy to articulate, not easy to share in the context of our historical development. But what do you think can be done, you know, of course we talk about education, but education is run by government, right? And then we talk about so many things are run by government. That's why, where do we even start?
I guess it really goes back to articulation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you want to engage in just a day-to-day sort of conversation with another person, we need those sort of articulation, because without articulation of facts, I mean, because you were just talking about, I mean, these days we just scroll over our TikTok or Instagram or YouTube shorts and everything is just
3 seconds, 5 seconds, yes. 10 second shots.
I mean, if you don't manage to convince people within that short span of time, unfortunately, I mean, we're getting less and less attentive to all these sort of details. And so without proper sort of engagement, without knowing your facts, it will be very, very difficult to engage in conversation that will literally cause some people to have their opinion shifted. I mean, we're not saying that we want necessarily for people to be conformed to what we are thinking, but there should be some sort of freedom to really just engage in a day-to-day sort of conversation. And even if it's a debate,
yep.
even if it's an exchange of different kind of opinions, people should be open, remain open-minded about listening to what other people has to say, and we can agree to disagree.
So one of the topic that we kind of did quite a lot, I think in season two, was during the COVID era, right? So it's interesting that we have a new health minister and immediately he came back and said, oh, we had to be very careful of COVID. And so kind of caused us to have discussion again, because it is all about critical thinking, right? And it's not like we say you should do this or you shouldn't do that. But a lot of our discussion, especially in Malaysian context, we're saying that there is just no room for debate. People want to be like government know best. You know, when it comes to lockdown, when it comes to movement control, when it comes to vaccine. And that's why just now dinner, we're just asking everyone, right? So anyone really for booster now and things like that? And I think we can see the interest is getting less and less strong. And because some people, a lot of people, I'll say, kind of have some suspicion, right?
Or maybe they themselves are suffering from some sort of...
Actually, I met many people who suffer directly in terms of they don't feel so well after the vaccine. Some people quite mild. But a lot of people are like, even my neighbor was your previous landlord. Remember, you know, the husband had a surgery. And the wife was like, well, I really think it's caused by the vaccine.
Wow.
So it's not uncommon to hear this kind of thing. But here's the thing. When the whole mandate was thrown into the equation, and we kept saying, right, it's an experimental product. If your product is so good, why do you need hundreds of pages of waiver and things like that? So people are not thinking. And
we're also looking at the news article that reads, whereby Malaysian publication has a lot that has been retracted.
Mm. Yeah, the talk about universities and things like that. And I think Lan Shi was just saying that the entire medical research community has been fully compromised by the whole COVID, because they're basically bought by pharma. Because it's like a lot of research. Actually, one of my doctors who is can't remember the special, but it's a physician that kind of look at thyroid and things like that. So she published, I think she's a professor in UM. So I think she published like 10 papers, and all of them are kind of sponsored by pharma. Mm. And I think that's just the way it is, you know. But how do you sponsor and still maintain kind of neutrality in financial control? It's a bit hard, right? I mean, it's like if people donate to a political cause, are they going to have undue influence over the political direction?
I mean, it is said that you're beholden to your donors.
So that's what we call, you know, in US, we have a category called the donor class. So people accuse Ron DeSantis of being a donor class. And I think when you look at those who supported him, seems to be like that. But unless you are Donald Trump who can self-finance, this is just the way it is.
Oh, he's recently, I'm going to release this mugshot edition, right? The MFT.
yeah. I mean, and people buy that. You know, we know that it doesn't have value at all. But people buy that because it's like a forever memorial. I think the artistic value is zero. But it's like, it's going to stay in some internet space forever, even after I die. I think that's the function of those token, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, coming back to, I mean, remember our friend David Tian also, you know, he's, you know, involved with politics and things like that. you know, just being realistic, if you don't have finance and things like that, how do you do things? But yep. if people give you money, are you then beholden? So, I mean, that's a different topic altogether. But I think as we close today, I mean, this is just a kind of introduction for us to kind of talk about some of the things we want to push. One of the things I really felt, you know, 2 months we didn't do a show and we think about what's happening. But one of the things I feel is that Malaysians do have interest to talk about this kind of thing. So when you sit down on a table with food and things like that, people do talk about it. But then when you ask them, oh, you want to come to the show and talk about it, then they're like, no, that kind of thing. But I find that there are still people who care. And maybe they don't want to, maybe they're not the social media type. And in fact, nowadays, I don't do social media, so maybe I'm a bit biased. But I just find that a lot of things are not, there's no substance. I don't know, I just feel that maybe there's a sign that we are, you know, we are like the YX generation. You know, it's like you are Y, I'm literally just before Y. But you know what I mean or not? It's like, but some people will be like, oh, you know, like my children like that. You know, they just watch shorts like very fast, you know. And they can remember, but they remember all the yang bukan-bukan, that's what. So, but you know, how do we encourage substance? Mm. I mean, that's one of the things I've been thinking the last 2 months. How do we encourage that? Yeah, so maybe I think we just have to go and catch some the Y. What's between Y and Z?
The millennial. No.
You are considered early Y, right? Mid Y. Mid millennial. Yeah, I think you are mid millennial. The oldest millennial will be about 40. So millennial is just right after our era. So we talk about, in fact, the Z generation is maybe those just in the working force now. Mm. So those in school, high school, primary school, I think is another level down. So yeah, it would be interesting. You know, maybe, you know, sometimes they have their own thoughts also, a bit different. Maybe we can hear them out.
Yeah. Maybe we could do some sort of book review, like Animal Farm.
Oh, yeah.
That would be very interesting. I mean, just looking at a fiction book and people can begin to really just think about the whole concept. I mean that really talks about the control.
Yeah, book review or movie review.
Yep.
Like recently you watched the Hunger Games prequel, right? And I wanted to watch, but I just recently we watched the original trilogy plus one, right? Trilogy plus one. So it's very interesting because it's kind of similar, right? That people want to have self-determination and then they are silenced. And then in the pursuit of self-determination, you can get a totalitarian.
Yep.
And there's always a risk, right? So, but anyway, one of the episode that I intend to do also will be just talk to some of our friends from Sarawak and see how they feel, because one of the things that we have seen, especially with Unity government, is that the pro-independence voice seems a bit muted now.
Yep.
And that's just a political game, right? And what our Prime Minister did with Palestine, you know, that was a few weeks ago, now kind of a bit toned down already. But what he did kind of, in a way, some people say nullify the green wave.
Mm.
So it's interesting that sometimes, what do you do when your cause seems to lose a bit of wind? You know, do you double down or do you kind of, so...
Wow, that's a tough call.
Yeah, I mean, we do have friends who are quite passionate about the independence. But one of the things I really, really want to ask them is, do you feel independence and self-determination have similarity?
Mm.
Because it seems like they are quite different, you know?
Yep.
The independence call is the form that we have been shared with seems to be like they want to be like Singapore. It seems like a lot of the Sarawakian who are in favor of independence, they want to be a Singapore, but to me that would be a great mistake because you are putting on efficient doesn't mean self-determination. It just means that yeah, it's run well, but it can get very, very big.
Yep. Agree.
So, but anyway, those will be the things I want to talk about. All right. So any concluding things you want to add before we kind of wrap up? I mean, I know it's kind of like quite random today. It's kind of like our setup, right? Kind of chill and random today.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we could even do an episode on really discussing some of these populist moves that has been emerging all around the world.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just how we talk about Argentina, Javier Milei.
Yeah.
He's like the madman. I kept thinking about President Javier because he's like 22 years in a pseudo-socialist. I mean, when you look at him, he's like, he seems really nuts. I mean, the way he presents himself. But there is some logical explanation.
But he's also very, very articulate.
Yeah, he is an economist who knows what is happening and he said he wants to get rid of central bank and things like that. And I think people are ready for that because they suffer for so long. So the question is, you know, does Malaysia need to suffer more so that people will be ready for a change?
Yep.
I hope not. And every time I think about, it's just kind of too much trouble. But I kept thinking about the next generation. You see, we're not just living for ourselves, but we are living for the next generation. And if we don't do well, the next generation will find it even harder to survive than what we have.
Oh, we could definitely talk about dinks. No income, no kids. That's the trend.
Okay, that will be... You can kind of champion that episode, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think our time is kind of up already. So this is kind of like officially a new season, right? A new video season. So we'll see how it goes. And yeah, I'm kind of confident that we will bring more interesting guests this time around.
Yes.
All right, so until next time. Okay, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.